Marcus and Markeith Morris are fraternal twins, and if you see them together, there's a good chance you won't be able to tell them apart.
You gotta probably wait till we get our haircuts, because my sideburns may be just a little bit lighter than his.
It hasn't always been easy for their own team.
Freshman year, they used to switch their jerseys during practice and used to give coach fits.
Hey, CT.
It's not funny games.
Believe me, I know.
It's literally a game, though. Anyways, we'll start there. The game that we're talking about, everyone, because I just finished setting up, is Wizards Celtics. And today, I'm on the microphone with James Hollis and CT Schwenk. Before I introduce them, though, I wanted to say it's good to be back. It's been a while since I recorded a show. I had some stuff going on. The next show is going to be great. I'm trying to get Bram from our own at Almighty Baller Radio Warriors Huddle, and then also Bram, two Brams, both hosting Warrior Show from Golden State of Mindcast. And since the Warriors don't have any competition in the West, we're going to have a little competition. It's going to be Battle of the Brams. CT?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. You're there. All right.
I'm here.
You're not asleep yet?
I'm hanging on, man. You know, you've asked me to come on the show a couple times throughout the season, and you always record super late, and it just doesn't really
work.
It doesn't work for me normally, but I figured since I'm riding high off the win here, and I just did a Zardcast with the boys, you know, that I'd hop on and share my thoughts. So I'm happy to be here. It's been a while.
Well, it has been, yeah.
Enjoy it while you can, CT.
this is how we're starting.
And then that's the voice of James Hollis, aggressor, the other person fighting. We were all just yelling at each other intermittently before we started recording here as I screwed around and fumbled to get my equipment together. But James Hollis, host of The Truth, formerly a Celtic show, now an NBA show. It's fun. But a Celtics fan nonetheless. So James, say hi. You know, let them all know who you are, particularly your Twitter alter ego, because no one knows who James Hollis is. I think
that's actually very true. That's why I went back to Snotty Dripping, because I had people who actually unfollowed me and blocked me because it's like I thought it was some strange account I accidentally followed. So I'm a Celtic. I'm a pretty pathetic Celtics fan. I'll call it, because when they're not doing good, I get pissed off at them. I write over B-Ball Breakdown, and yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Snotty Dripping.
Were you pissed off tonight?
This is one of those games that happens. I think Isaiah's mouth is bothering him more than he's letting on, and it kind of showed tonight. He had to go and get more some kind of dental work done. So something's going on with that tooth. I think they can't keep it in or something. So yeah, just one of those games, man. Bogdanovich came out nuts. Just one of those games.
Yeah, I think that this game really showed off the fact. I think for the first two games, the Celtics won because they execute better. I think their system's better, their coaching is better, they move the ball better, and all of the stuff in between they do better. But to the extent that they're good at basketball, I think the Wizards are probably better at basketball. Like, I think John Wall would win one-on-one with Isaiah Thomas, Isaiah Thomas being
weird.
Really good.
That's weird that you say that, because, I mean, they just kind of went one-on-one, and one guy had 53, another guy had 40, but, yeah, that's cool.
Well, I think that's sort of misunderstanding. Like,
one guy scored 28, 29 points a game this season, another one scored, what, 24, 25, but, yeah, you got it.
But it's a team sport.
You just said,
CT, what do you think? Who's better?
You literally just said one-on-one who would win.
Yeah, he said one-on-one, but they've been playing five.
Right, exactly.
But, I mean, one-on-one, Isaiah would still smoke him. He can't guard Isaiah.
Well, I mean, Markeith Morris can't guard Isaiah, so what right. They kept doing is getting Markeith Morris so that he had to, you know, guard him out to the perimeter. And, I mean, the off-ball stuff that Stevens does to get Isaiah Thomas open, that in conjunction with, like what you said, Al Horford playing the center, the floor is so well spread with everyone being able to shoot threes, regardless of who's playing center, Kelly Olynyk or Al Horford. And their ball movement is super crisp, and their plays are just drawn up really well. So you see, I mean, I've seen plays with like three off-ball screens set for just Isaiah Thomas. Like, the offense revolves around him, even when he's not even when he doesn't have the ball in his hand, and like that's what I mean.
I mean this. All right, so it's a silly point about one on one because that's a ridiculous way to judge players. We should already know that. Point guard defense is the one position you could really afford to not have a really good defender.
That's simple fact. Incorrect, that go ahead.
None of the elite guards can guard the other elite guards. So this whole the one on one thing is silly. It's all about the fit and the rest of the team around him. So I think the Wizards are more top heavy in that Bradley Beal, John Wall, and Otto Porter. You know, that's a really strong top three. And then it's Isaiah and Horford who are great. And after that, it's pretty precipitous fall off. But I think Boston's deeper. And like you said, they're more disciplined. They run a better system. Stevens is a really good coach. But yeah, it was just too much. It was, you know, the home crowd.
CT,
got there
stand
today.
Up for yourself, man. Come on, just say it. The Wizards are more talented. You agree with me, right?
They are more talented, you guys. And honestly, we were just talking about this on Zardcast. We've been laboring on it. You know, those first two games, to us, it really felt like, you know, they put a couple things together, and you know, maybe the Celtics don't get every break possible. And Isaiah Thomas, you know, he scores 30 instead of 50 and 20 instead of 30, and the Wizards win those games. And tonight was when, you know, these little things came together. You got some bench scoring from Bogdanovich, like Snotty James said over there. And, you know, you had John Wall. He was playing better defense tonight against Isaiah. Imagine that. You know, he wasn't getting matched up against Marcin Gortat and Markieff Morris. You had Otto able to take advantage of the defensive matchup against Isaiah Thomas. You know, these were the things that, just like the small things that they were like, if they could just tweak it a little bit, you know, they'd be fine. And they basically made everything click. And we didn't even have a good Bradley Beal showing tonight. And they got it done in you know, big fashion. And, you know, I don't think, you know, the Celtics are going to play as poorly tonight, you know, as they will on Sunday. Like, I could see them, you know, winning handily again. I mean, they've been, obviously they're down in the series, but I'd say they've won most of the quarters. I mean, out of the 12 quarters that they've played, I'd say they probably won 8 or maybe even 9 of them so far. So I'm not discouraged. And I do think the Wizards are better at basketball still.
Well, I think the Celtics are better at basketball. The Wizards just have better players.
I think both of them, actually.
I think that the Celtics are a better team. I guess that's the point I'm trying to make. It's
okay. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't the Thunder lead for like 130 of like the 190 minutes they played or something?
Isn't that right? Maybe something like that, yeah.
You have no clue.
I have no idea.
But they did. So that whole thing about how many quarters you win doesn't really matter.
I know it doesn't matter like right now, but like if I'm, you know, looking at the overall performance of the Wiz and I'm trying to project out, that's definitely something, you know, worth taking stock of. You know, the Wizards haven't gotten blown out. The Celtics did tonight. So that's
the machinations of the Celtics offense, there's so much ball movement. It's a really spread floor to facilitate that ball movement. It's almost like a team built around Brad Stevens and then Isaiah Thomas. I think he's having this breakout year, not because he's dominating the ball so much, but partially because he's sharing it with Al Horford in a similar way that the Warriors do that with Draymond Green and Steph Curry, where Steph Curry plays off ball. And they sort of rely on that system that they've set up. It's I just really like what the Celtics are doing. And I tweeted at one point during the game that I was watching them run plays, and it was this particular play. It was like 5 minutes before halftime, and they kept passing up good shots to get great shots. And then there was like 2 seconds left on the shot clock, and just Isaiah Thomas just had to put something up. And I was just sort of thinking to myself, like, gee, that would have gone a lot better if they just had better players. Does that make sense?
I mean, yeah, any team is better with better players. I'm not sure what yes, it makes perfect sense.
Here's sort of the point that I'm trying to make. I think that the Celtics have a smaller margin of error than the Wizards do because they don't have as much talent, but that they don't make as many mistakes. They fully optimize their pieces. They use every piece of the puzzle as well as it possibly can be used. And the Wizards just don't do that. The Wizards sometimes are sort of like a battering ram. Like they just sort of try to out talent. Like they out John Wall and out Bradley Beal. They sometimes slip back into that thing that has been a problem for them for the last couple of years, which is, well, if you're just playing your turn, my turn between Bradley Beal and John Wall, that's a problem instead of integrating them into a system. That's what I mean. Just
I think that's like the most reasoned, like, fair take on the series, and we can go to bed now. So good show, everyone. And Chris, you continue to be the most mindful man in basketball podcasting.
No, he's not. He's horrible. He's freaking terrible.
So
I get what you're trying to do, and this is what the part of the NBA Twitter that's just starting to really piss me off. We don't need. Sometimes it's just basketball. It's basketball. And sure, we can discuss basketball. We watch basketball. We love basketball. But, like, we don't need to take it down to that level. And John Wall.
Yes, we do.
I know, and it's annoying. John Wall is the best player in the series. I love
don't
Isaiah.
Don't you write for a site called B-Ball Breakdown?
And I don't care what they do.
I'm trying to break down B-Ball, dude.
That annoys the hell out of me, too. Everybody wants to tell me you want to assign numbers to everything. It's pretty annoying. And I don't want to sound like one of those cavemen, because I respect and I love analytics, and I know what it.
Well, I'm not even talking about analytics. I'm just saying, like, strategically.
Yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. So my point is that it's just basketball. So we can say what we want to say. It's all about matchups. And John Wall's the best player in the series. I give it to him for the season. But it's basically the strategic advantages that Brad Stevens brings.
Well, so it's interesting because what I think the biggest divide between the Celtics and the Wizards is that what you would call strategery, I think CT would call shenanigans. And tonight, it's like Marcus Smart's shenanigans like didn't work. You know, he didn't get any charge calls when he flopped.
And Bradley Beal just tossing himself in the air like confetti did work, and that's fine.
Well, right. Well,
yeah, I mean, that's what they got to do, man.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, the Celtics are like better at shenanigans / strategery than the Wizards are, and that was amplified with the home court advantage. What I think is going to happen is that the next game, the Wizards will win because it's at home, and then that's how it will play out, is the home team will win every time, and the Celtics are the first seed, so they'll win in game 7.
No, someone is going to win on the other team's floor here soon, and I think it's going to be Boston next game.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. So you think total bounce back after tonight?
They got to. I think they were embarrassed tonight, and sure, it happens. You know, it's an embarrassing loss, but I don't think Otto Porter comes out and hits his, what, first 7 shots, whatever he did. I think, you know, Bogdan comes out towards 9, 10
points. Well, I don't think that's why the Celtics lost, though. I think the Celtics lost.
That was a 20-point lead. They had a 22-0 run.
The Celtics didn't score 100 points. They were under 97.
They gave up a 22. You put yourself in a 22-point hole early, let them get punched in the mouth. But Porter and Bogdan, I mean, I don't know. I get what you're right. Sure. You can say that, you know, an arbitrary number. They didn't score 100 points.
The Celtics shot 35%. That's not arbitrary.
That's fine. No, and that, yeah, you're just saying a number. Sure, they didn't shoot well. They gave up a 22. You can not shoot well and win if you don't give up a 22-0 run. That's my point. And they gave a 22-0 run because? Anyone?
Because Marcus Morris is standing in for Markieff.
The Wizards are playing better defense?
They definitely were playing great defense to start the game. And it's a notorious thing. Boston starts off slow against Washington every game. We both double-digit hold both games in Boston, and we were able to scrap back out of it. A 22-point hold is a whole different ball game. Great game, and I'm not taking anything away from Washington. Washington came out tonight, did what they had to do. They dealt with the physicality of Boston a lot better, and they met their force with more force instead of just, you know, they let Boston push them around a little bit in Boston.
Okay, so CT, all right. What do you think about that idea, that it was just like a punch-counter-punch thing? Because I think that, like I said, I sort of put it out as like a paradigm thing where you get away with certain stuff at home or just over the course of a possession. And if you make a little mistake, then, you know, someone's wide open in the corner. And the Celtics shoot the second most corner threes over the course of the regular season, besides the Miami Heat, actually. So another team coached by a really good coach. I think that if Brad Stevens coached the Wizards roster, I think that it would be like a 60-win team. That's personally what I think. I mean, where do you land on this? Like, I don't think it was a 22-point run. I think that it was just the Celtics were executing perfectly. And, I mean, you saw the Wizards out there. They were, like, closing out. If they did double-team Isaiah Thomas, they weren't running into the same problem where someone would be wide open somewhere. I mean, I didn't see a lot of uncontested threes from the Celtics. I think there's a reason they didn't shoot well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the 22-point run keyed it, but I don't think that's the whole story there. I mean, especially because the Celtics have, like you said, man, James, it was they've overcome that in two games already. Like, it, you know, I think it was.
But that's, come on, guys, come on. Let's be real. That they overcame it two games, but you can't come back every game. So when you give up a 22, you put yourself in a 22-point hole, and you lose by, I don't know, what was the final score? It was almost 30.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. You put yourself in that kind of hole on the road and got the Wizards rolling. Your guys want to talk about it some more, and that's fine. My point is that was a turning point. You get yourself down 12 to 34. It's really hard to come back.
Yeah. All right. I'll agree with you there. It's certain because they were able to keep it up and keep their foot on the gas and especially keep up the defensive intensity. I would agree that was the turning point in the game. But I wouldn't. Say that was the I feel like maybe you're putting a little bit more weight on it than we are, but you know, it's tomatoes. Yes. Tomatoes.
Well, and I'm putting
a lot of weight on a 22-point deficit. Yes, I am.
Okay, how about this? All right, do you know how many rebounds Al Horford had?
He did not rebound well.
He had two rebounds. There, and Martin Gortat had 16. That's sort of an example of what I'm talking about. Like,
yeah,
one player was more physically dominant and athletic. The other player was like more skilled finesse, right? And finesse to CT, I think, would just be shenanigans, right? I mean, Isaiah Thomas, like he's gotten really good at playing defenders like sort of on their hip, using his body, realizing that, I mean, he's never going to get called for an offensive foul because referees just don't call 5 foot. Three players.
That's not an offensive foul. If you're trailing me on the play and you're behind me and I just go up to shoot and you run into me, it's not an offensive foul.
Well, I mean, I'm saying the way that he sort of uses his body to create separation. I mean, I think the ways that he creates separation, the ways that he creates the angles that he can shoot from so that they don't just get swatted, I think that if he was a bigger player, they would be fouls.
Well, he wouldn't have to do that if he was a bigger player.
Well, right.
But it's not a foul. You can use let's be real. You could use, yeah, he's not shoving his left arm out there. You can put your body into people and get separation. Joe Johnson, he's a big proponent of that. So I sound salty tonight because it was an ugly loss. But it's, yeah, come on now. Like, first it's the coach saying he's caring. You know, it's the Chicago coach saying he's caring. Now it's offensive fouls.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it's shenanigans. I think that it's like using an advantage. I like the Celtics. I think they're going to win the series.
CT.
Well, yeah. So here's an example. One of the main things that the Celtics did that was particularly wacky, right, was a four guard lineup last game.
Awesome.
Right.
Yep.
No. I think it's awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
I love that. And I really love the crazy stuff that Isaiah Thomas does to get open. And like, that's sort of like, I know that you hate Chris Paul, but it's a little bit like that. It's like using whatever advantage you can get. It's strategery, unless you think it's BS.
At the cult of Chris Paul the way everyone else does.
Well, yeah, I mean,
that's two of us on this podcast.
Thank you. Good. CT, I knew you. CT, everything I was thinking about you in my head, I take back now.
But it's just like John Wall. He's like faster than everyone. He's stronger. He's more explosive. When Martin Gortat just dominated Al Horford, it's like, I think that there's really almost no way that the Celtics can dominate another team. They can just out execute them so well that it's like, well, we're raining threes from outside. It's like a different way of playing. It's that's sort of the distinction I'm trying to make. It's like, I think the Wizards play their best almost when they're not being strategic, when they're just like, when John Wall is just going ham and like everyone's actually just trying to physically dominate the person that they're defending. But the Celtics like need to be able to finesse things. They need to have that little bit of separation. It's more of a thinking type of thing. I mean, Randy Whitman, how many wins did Randy Whitman get with the Wizards a couple years ago? Like 48, right?
Yeah, I think it was maybe 47.
Okay, so like Randy Whitman's awful and Brad Stevens is great. I just think that there's a talent disparity. I think that if Brad Stevens coached the Wizards, that the Wizards would be amazing.
Yeah, I think so too, man. Although Scotty Brooks, he's not bad. I mean, he's kind of he figured he's sorted some things out here. You think he's bad? No.
Well, I think that he addressed. I think that he addressed and X's and O's. I think he is.
Okay, that's not bad. All right, you're not a head coach if you're bad. He's not very.
He's not creative. Randy Whitman.
He's not very creative. To install some kind of complex offense with sets, but he puts his guys in positions to succeed, and he got Bradley Beal and John Wall to play nice. He's not a bad coach.
Well, okay,
he's really
okay.
good at managing young talent, and he gets the most out of his guys, but he keeps things very simple and streamlined. And you can give him an F for end of game plays, because basically he's going to do what most coaches do: put the ball in my best player's hands, and let him make plays.
Right. Yeah. No. And that's. That's a better way of putting it. That's what I mean. He's not a bad coach. I think that coaching is more complicated than a clipboard, right? But when you isolate the clipboard thing, I just don't think that he's as impressive. And then Brad Stevens has all that other stuff. I mean, I think that you honestly could just go to the Wizards and say, play harder. You know, if you could somehow get like crawl into their brain and just make them play harder, close out better, pay more attention, be more detailed, rotate better, recover better, just like be better, then the Wizards win. But I think that the Celtics, sort of by nature of the wacky stuff they do, like all of the off-ball screens, all of the crazy four-guard lineups, all of the stuff that they have to do to get a win, it's sort of indicative of that.
But see, that's a, I see this is all right. So I have a question for you. On one hand, this is part of beautiful basketball, what Boston does. They actually run plays and they run sets and you know, guys know their roles.
Right.
How is that? I don't get, like, it sounds almost like you're complaining about that.
No, you know I mean? Like, I like it. I think that, like
they have to do all this trickery. It's not trickery. That's basketball.
Right. I mean, but to CT, it's BS. And that's why you guys hate each other.
Yeah, it is BS the fact that they can just, I mean, those first two games especially, they executed perfectly, they hit every shot, they were getting every call with Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart, you know, doing what they do. It's part of the package, but yeah, it is annoying that, you know, they can set a million screens and free Isaiah Thomas, and all of a sudden he's on Markieff Morris, and you know he drills a shot from 16 feet, and you know, like,
right. It's nothing. So, I will say, James, do you like?
Okay,
go ahead.
I was just going to say that. I mean, we can say what you want, and I just defended Scott Brooks, but it took him 3 games to figure out how to target Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah,
that's
figured out last game.
I still don't think he even did it. Anyway, so all right, here. James, do you like Marcus Smart?
I love Marcus Smart.
I love Marcus Smart, right? But this is the point I'm trying to make. The same things about Marcus Smart that makes Nick Gelso say that he's a dumbass are the same things that make Bill Simmons on a good night on game 2 when Marcus Smart is getting those crazy offensive rebounds and scrapping and stuff. That's what makes Bill Simmons say that he plays winning basketball even though you can't see it in the stats.
All right, so first, Nick Gelso, I want to make sure that we all say that you took back what you said about Marcus Smart. So, Chris, stop being a jerk. He took it back. He apologized for saying that. So, all right,
I could bleep his name out or something. But you know, he's being a dumbass. Not he is a dumbass. Like it's
Let's not flopping around. Let's not split hairs. He took it back and said, I didn't mean to say that about Marcus. So, Marcus, he can't shoot a lick, and that's troubling, you know, for what he was a number 6 pick. That really bothers me. But he's strong as a bull. He's a smart player. He's a really, really good defender, and he's becoming a much better playmaker. So I love Marcus Smart, and I hope they keep him around for a long time. He does do dumb. He does things that infuriates other teams. And like tonight, he was not good. He had a ton of turnovers tonight. I don't know what was going on with him. The DC nightlife or something, but yeah, he wasn't great.
Stadium
tonight.
Club.
Yeah. So CT, would you say that really what James just said, it's like, he's not a good shooter, AKA he's not good at making shots, AKA the point of basketball, right? You know, but he's, you know, he's scrappy, he hustles. He's basically good at shenanigans. Like he's good at like BS, right?
Yeah. I think that's a fair statement. I think he's super annoying and wish he would go away forever. I'm so tired of Marcus Smart. It's unbelievable. So when he has a terrible game like tonight, you got to relish in it, everyone. But yeah, he's annoying.
Like, why not actually play basketball instead of flopping and like doing like little mind trick stuff?
He can't. He's unable to hit shots and, you know, be a playmaker, I guess. And so that's,
you know, what's funny about this,
which is a fine role to have.
It is, until Chris, though. Don't be a hypocrite, because you love Chris Paul, and Chris Paul is incessant. He does it every. He can't help himself.
Wait, are you talking to me?
Yes, I'm talking.
Look, I've already said that I'm on the side of the Celtics. I'm just trying to stoke the flames, though. Like, I'm playing. I'm like talking out of both sides of my mouth.
Don't be a hypocrite, because you love that jerk Chris Paul, and you're down on your knees for him. But now it's Marcus Smart doing it.
No, well, I like Marcus Smart, though. I don't actually think that he is, like, cheap. I think that what he brings is really valuable, and I like it. I think it's, like, a heady game. I think that he, you know, is smart. He does smart basketball. What?
I forget what kind of two-faced monster you are sometimes.
Yeah, I know. I'm playing the game, man.
Damn reasonable.
I'm doing what the media is doing. The media has actually really been enjoying this whole thing. This series actually, I mean, if there ever was a podcast to talk about things besides, like, you know, b-ball breakdown type stuff, okay, James, this would be a good series. Because, look, I want to start here. If you had someone who was your identical twin, and you made sure that you had the exact same tattoos, no distinguishing scars, features, no birthmark, like, you could do real Freaky Friday or the Twin Trap or the Parent Trap, I don't remember, that Lindsay Lohan movie.
Is this R-rated?
Yeah,
R-rated show?
Sure, let's say it is.
Because Project cut. Hey, let's cut all that out of there. Cut everything I just said out of there too. Yeah, let's cut that out.
Yeah, Bossa Nova. Oh God. So, anyways, if you spent your whole life cultivating this exact identity thing, this is the moment, right? Like, oh man, you're in the playoffs and you hurt your ankle. This is when you would actually capitalize on it, right? Like that. There's no way that was actually Markieff. I refuse to believe that.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the one moment they could finally do it. Maybe they've had
in the past,
but yeah, this is.
I actually think that was Marcus Morris.
This is the time in the movie, like at the very end. You know, this is what we've been building to, the third act.
They said, you know, do you read that thing? They said they actually did that. They did it when they were playing AAU ball.
They did like that. That was Marcus Morris, right?
Yeah, one of them fouled out, and the other one was just sitting on the bench. He fouled out, and the other one got hurt, and so the one who fouled out they swapped jerseys, and the one that fouled out came back into play.
Okay, dude, that's Marcus Morris, man. I wish there was a way that you could, like, you know, when you're trying to prove in like a TV show that someone has superpowers, or like you throw a spoon at them or something, and then they make it levitate in front of them. It's like, gotcha, you have superpowers. I wish there was a way, because I was thinking, actually, you could say, like, hey, Marcus, and if it was not Markieff and it was actually Marcus, then Marcus might turn his head and be like, huh? And then you could say, hey, I got you. But they've been around each other their whole lives. And
I was gonna say, the problem is that they've been doing this for a while, so they probably would be hip to all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, but I think that if you said Markieff around Marcus, Markieff would, like, look, regardless of whether he was playing a role. Right, right.
Yeah, like, what, my brother? He'd look around.
Yeah, right, yeah. So it's not like you could be like, I got you, you're definitely Marcus. Like, it's like, no, I'm not. That's my brother's name, you know?
They say that the people who know them both say they can tell them apart. I got twin cousins, and it's true. They were identical twins, but after a while, I could immediately look and tell them apart. But I don't know if that's true with Marcus and Marcus.
They have identical tattoos.
Well, the way to tell them apart is that they both slightly differ in how they manicure their beards. I believe it's Marcus that has the more tame one, and Markieff lets it run a little bit wild.
But see, all they got to do is Marcus just has to, like, kind of puff his out, you know,
mm-hmm. Right?
Make it disheveled. That's crazy,
that was
dude.
Marcus. Okay. What are the chances that was Marcus? Like 60%.
We can do a whole episode once of just, we're going to do it hot take style. We're going to do like Radio Ethan.
RIP, man. No, but like, is that Alex Jones of me to think that like that actually might be Marcus?
Yeah, I think it is.
100%.
But I'm seriously thinking, like, why do this your whole life and not seize the opportunity?
They've done it. They've said they've done it once. What have they done their whole life? So
look. Okay, look, okay, here, let me put it a certain way. The type of person who walks around packing heat, I guess, like, if you're, like, you know, someone who carries, like, a Glock, like, on your hip or whatever, you've got to be sort of waiting for an opportunity to use it, not hoping that you get mugged, but sort of hoping that you get mugged so you can be like, boom, all right, ready, this is why.
What is
finally my time to shine.
We're going off the rails. What's happening?
Think about how great the montage in the Morris movie would be of them training to beat each other. There'd be a scene of them, like, in the bathroom, like, fixing their beards, you know, opposite, and, you know, practicing not being distracted by the other, saying the other one's names to trick them.
It would be a good scene of them sitting across the table for each other, staring each other's face and doing the exact same motions as they eat.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, almost like, and then the hand up, like, the mirror moving, and they both stop at the same time.
Look, if you guys went through the trouble to have an identical copy, tattoos, you know, beard, all this stuff, right? Then if you would do that, right? Like, if you sprained your ankle, I mean, I don't know. Well, it actually, like, back to the X's and O's. I mean, Markeith, quote unquote, only played like 19 minutes because Bojan was going ham, so it's not as good of an argument as it was if he had played like 40 minutes. So what if Marcus/Markeith had played like 40 minutes? What if he plays 40 minutes next game?
I mean, by next game, the ankle will probably be fine to be Markeith again.
I don't know. It was a pretty bad sprain.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's looked pretty...
It doesn't look like it's affected him too much. I mean, he hasn't been playing as much, but he seems fine on the court.
CT, I will say that beginning of the season, I predicted Washington would be back in the playoffs and wouldn't be bad. I believe in Scott Brooks, and I didn't think John Wall would be this good, but I had you guys back in the playoffs.
Oh, I had to go on Zardcast to tell him that it was all going to be okay.
Yeah, you did reassure us. We were we were pretty down in the dumps. And that 2-8 stretch there, that was ugly.
Oh yeah, with the beginning of the season when you got 7-13 or something.
Yeah,
yeah.
Those were dark times.
I think this series has given me an appreciation for what it would mean to have a guy like Jimmy Butler, who, I mean, Hoiberg doesn't know what he's doing, right? Like, or at least if he does know what he's doing, he hasn't been able to communicate that through his players because they just don't care. Jimmy Butler just takes over, you know?
Well, go ahead. No, not really, because he played the Celtics. He didn't take over. This series, it gives me a very good, like, it shows the blessing of the Celtics, the depth, the great system. They have really good role players, and, they just need another star in there. It shows you that, and it shows you how far along. Like, Terry Rozier is a valuable player. I understand, you know, oh, you should trade him for Ibaka. Now, Ibaka's, he's not the, what he's not the difference maker, but it also showed you how far. I said this today on Twitter that there's a certain almost like the league's almost defeated right now with Cleveland and Golden State. They're just so much better than everyone else. I can't remember a time when the best team in the East and the West were just literally just head and shoulders above the competition. Because I mean, I remember we had to talk about Jimmy Butler going to Boston, and it'd been great, right? I would have appreciated him. It would have made a difference because look at LeBron James.
Right, I think
now
it would have made a difference, LeBron. Dude.
Okay.
I think that's okay, what they need.
They win a game. They win a game. They're not beating LeBron. Are you watching
Jimmy
LeBron
Butler's
James?
So good.
Let me explain this to you. How do you think LeBron James plays against Jimmy Butler? I just looked this up today. So how do you think he plays?
Well.
He's averaging like 28, like something like 28, 8, and 7 and shooting 54% for his career against Jimmy Butler. You understand that? And Jimmy Butler's he's doing his numbers. He's doing fine, but he's also lost 7 of the last 8 to LeBron James.
Yeah, but like his team is bad.
His team wasn't always bad though, and that's the 7-8. It's not just that wasn't just this year. You know. Okay, so let me ask you this. Hold. And be honest with me. And CT, I'm asking the same question.
All right.
Let's say back when Toronto was playing well in the season, how do you think they would match up against Cleveland?
Not well. I mean, okay.
Yeah, still probably not well. No, although better than they have so far in the playoffs.
How do you think the series was going to go? Because last year they won two. Last year they won two, and it was a 6-game series. How do you think it was going to go this year?
Yeah, I'd probably put it at two again. I guess maybe three when the Cavs were like totally bottoming out for them.
It might have went seven, right? Did you think that you would see what you're seeing right now?
No, definitely not.
Okay, so I mean, we always do this. We kind of forget who LeBron James is as the season goes on, and we see like he's just playing like a normal person. He's not a normal person, and the rest of his team feeds off him in a way that makes them not a normal team. So I get what we're saying. Yeah, Jimmy Butler and Isaiah Thomas would be great. Do you think Jimmy Butler, Isaiah Thomas, and Al Horford are defeating LeBron James?
I think you're a lot closer. I think that you're a lot closer than people probably think that they are.
We've had this conversation, so I'm asking CT. What percentage are you giving Isaiah Thomas, Al Horford, and Jimmy Butler of defeating LeBron James? LeBron James locked in team.
I'd give them 20 to 25%.
That's awfully high, but that's reasonable. Okay.
Yeah, I think I think they can at least take two games off of them. I could see them taking three.
But winning a series.
Winning a series, 20-25%, maybe closer to 20. I could see it happening. I mean,
yeah, they have a perfectly spread floor. So everyone can shoot.
We want it to happen so bad. We want it to happen so bad that we talk ourselves into it.
Here's what you would be doing, right? Okay, you saw that four-guard lineup out there, right, that they were running or whatever. It's like, instead of you would have everyone would be able to shoot 40%-ish from three, right? Al Horford, knockdown shooter.
So you're saying that we'd be Golden State?
I think that you would be a worse version of Golden State.
Because Golden State lost to the Clippers.
Yeah, and they almost won.
But they're Golden State, and we'll be a worse copy of Golden State. I don't like it. It's.
I mean, any given night, the Nets can...
But it's not a given night. You got to win 4 out of 7. It's not any given night.
Well, any given 7-game series.
Okay, no, it's not.
Any given Wednesday.
So because of this is how you view the Celtics, and you know, even if you add Jimmy Butler, it's still not enough. I feel like I keep hearing a lot of like no pieces untouchable on the Celtics right now. You know, including Al Horford and Isaiah Thomas.
They could all go. Yeah,
Do you feel that way? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they could all go. Yeah, I don't
care.
What
about Brad Stevens?
If he goes, then I think the rest of the house of cards falls down.
Right. So
my point is this. There's like, I get it, and I hope most probably this is the plan. This summer, they're going to revisit Jimmy Butler and Paul George. And then, because Paul George is probably on the way out, unless, you know, he makes the All-NBA, and we'll see how that goes. And we can probably get either one of those guys for even cheaper, or get Gordon Hayward. How are they going to we have so many options in Boston. There's no need at all for them to like I think Chris, you were saying it, and a lot of people were telling me this. Boston doesn't want to win. They're not even trying. There's no rush. We have no rush to do anything right now. Because right now, we get that number one pick. And the year after we have a good chance at number one pick. The year after we have a great pick too.
I think you're making it to the Eastern Conference Finals, right?
Isn't it crazy? And then
God, I hate this conversation.
And then guess what? If people are like, you're wasting Al Horford and Isaiah Thomas's. We're not wasting anything. We're a team. And if those guys, their time's up, they don't want to resign, we'll just keep on rolling. That's how it goes.
And like, let's be real. I mean, Isaiah Thomas is great, and Al Horford has had a nice career. It's not like, you're wasting like Bill Russell and, you know, Michael Jordan's career like with this crappy team. They're just pretty good players. I mean, Isaiah Thomas.
It's not like you're wasting Anthony Davis's career.
Right. Yeah. And that's sort of what I'm saying that the Celtics lack is a player like Jimmy Butler who, despite a crap system, or like Russell Westbrook, right? Someone who, when everything breaks down, can just somehow force it into the basket because it's like they've got this system and they pass it around and they move the ball really well. But no, ultimately,
Isaiah Thomas is like a top three scorer in the NBA right now.
Okay, but why though?
Because you know, you can say what you want, but the game he scored 53, he was in ISO at the top of the key going again. Now, CT, you could probably back me on this one. Sure, he got Isaiah. I mean, he got Markieff and he got Gortat a couple times, but he took Wall and he took Beal.
The difference I'm saying between like Allen Iverson and Isaiah Thomas is that, I mean, CT has been watching the Wizards defense. That's why I'm saying you can go into the locker room and say play better, and if they actually do it, they're just a much better team. It's because, like, if John Wall really wants to smother Isaiah Thomas, he can make that happen. They aren't disciplined.
That's not how the NBA works. Come on,
he
now.
Did stop it tonight.
I genuinely think that
he did it tonight. He's not doing it for 4 or 5, 6 games. Let's be real.
Because they're not disciplined.
Because that's not how it works in the NBA. You don't shut down the great scorers in the NBA. You just don't do it.
I think that Isaiah Thomas is only a great scorer because he's in this great system. I think he's a very good scorer in a great system with a perfect pick and roll or pick and pop partner with Al Horford and all this stuff together. It's like what we were saying with them being a worse version of the Warriors. It's like Draymond is an excellent player, Steph Curry is an excellent player, but like they're even better together on the court. They like amplify each other's strengths, right? I think that, you know, you have an MVP.
He scores the way he does. Good call. Marcus Smart and Jay Crowder are the reason he scores the way he does.
Isaiah Thomas?
The players around him are what make him so great. You're so full of crap, dude.
Execute a system really well.
I really hope you fall down some stairs tonight. I would love for you to step on a Lego with your bare foot today. I hope you break your toe on the end table.
I don't know, man.
Well, let me ask you, and I'm going to ask you this. I'm asking snarkily. What games did you watch this year?
How many games?
Yeah.
I watched probably, I don't know. So it's hard to tabulate. I would say 300, probably.
CT, I gave you.
No, seriously. I watch almost every game.
I said Celtics games. You did not watch 300 Celtics games this season.
Oh, Celtics. Okay.
Jesus Christ.
I didn't watch that much of the Celtics. I should have watched more.
Thank you very much. Thank you. CT, do you agree with his assessment that Isaiah is only such a good scorer because of the system? So you're calling Isaiah a system player.
I think he's a very good scorer.
Chris, I'm asking CT. You had your turn.
I mean, I think he is calling Isaiah a system scorer a little bit. Yeah, but I am a little bit, honestly.
Hey, CT, make sure you follow me on Twitter. And I'm going to unfollow Chris. I need a new homie.
I think I do follow you. We follow you from the Zardcast account for sure. One of my co-hosts, Dave, he was actually pointing out, and I want to ask you, he's like, James engages with so many Twitter trolls. Why do you feel compelled to battle it out with these guys?
Oh, because I'm usually bored. I just like making So I quote tweet so everybody can see what they're saying, and then I just kind of laugh at them.
It's first take, you know? He just wants to argue and say that he doesn't want to argue.
That's not true. Read my bio. I'm not there to argue.
That's what I'm saying. You say that you don't want to argue,
It's not there to argue. Sometimes I state my opinion and people come to argue. And I want, like, read my bio. I'm not trying to argue with you. I just said this.
This is the trickery. This is the Celtics trickery, the BS, right? The strategery. I mean, he says in his bio that he doesn't want to argue, but all he does is argue.
Chris Paul's not that great. If I tell the world that, and you know, I say he's good, but he's not as good as people make him out to be, I'm not arguing. I'm just telling you my view of Chris Paul.
He's trying to get your goat.
No, he agrees. He knows stuff.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I deal with quite a few, you know, sneaky Boston fans. Let's say
sneaky Bostoners.
I'll say this: we got the worst fans.
Oh God,
the worst fans on earth. Yeah, we got some. Now I will say Washington, you guys, your fans are annoying because any taste of success, you become assholes. So that's what Washington fans are the worst for. Any taste is any little thing that like I said this. John Wall is right now as good as Washington fans were saying he was 2 years ago. He's become what they want him to be, but he wasn't that 2 years ago. But you couldn't tell them that. You know what I'm saying? So
I'd say he's better.
No. Because 2 years ago, he was being called the best point guard by Wizards fans, and he wasn't. And now he has a chance. He's up there. He's up there in the conversation for top four, top three, whatever. I can see if now somebody says, I would rather have Wall than Chris Paul. People were saying that 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's okay. I was probably saying that 2 years ago, so I'll throw myself in with that lot. One of my other co-hosts, Gary, he was at the game. He goes to a lot of games, and he says his favorite thing about going to Wizards games is at the end, whenever the Wizards win, because DC fans aren't really like hostile. We barely show up to games. We're not known for getting into it with other fans, but like
you're more into chicken sandwiches than the winning.
But as soon as that final buzzer goes and the Wizards win, he says she's like, I kid you, just like everyone around him flips a switch and everyone just turns into a huge a-hole and starts battling with the other fans around them. Which is also a good spot. I guess it makes sense because there are always so many other fans from other teams, just the way DC is. But, at least we got a little bit of backbone.
Hey, and you, guess what? Your boy John Wall got his billboard.
Yeah, he finally did.
He finally got his billboard.
I mean, the Baltimore Orioles have a billboard in Washington, D.C. I don't understand why it took this long for John Wall. And it wasn't even, I mean, it's a mural or like a giant painting more than anything.
Oh, yeah,
it's,
I saw that, yeah.
It's not even like a billboard on like a major road or something like that.
Yeah, but why would you want a billboard, though? As opposed to a mural, right?
I think it was, the mural is way cooler, but I think he just meant it as like...
Why is it the team promoting me?
Yeah,
how does Kevin Durant have a billboard and I don't?
Yeah. Right. Why does he have a signature shoe? Like, why? Right. You know, yeah. Okay, well, so let's run through a couple more things so that, unprofessional CT who won't stay up for love of the game can go to sleep.
I gotta run here in just a minute.
Okay. We're gonna run through a couple more things. So, if Kelly Oubre is suspended, is that a big deal?
I think it is a big. I'd say no for this game because I think that we could get something like what Bogdanovich gave us this game. I actually don't really think he gets suspended. I think he might get a big fat fine. He could get suspended because he did run into a referee, but if you watch it,
he gets suspended.
Yeah, but it wasn't intentional. Like, you can tell, like, it's not, he wasn't going after the referee. I don't know. They just kind of bumped into him. So I could see him being lenient in that sense and giving him a big fine. So
I think the NBA,
it could be costly, but I think they'll be fine, especially at home. I'd be more concerned on
that. So, pretending for a second that it isn't Marcus Morris out there and that it's actually Markieff, do you think that Scottie Brooks will continue playing basically Otto Porter at the four and starting? I mean, he didn't start Bogdanovich at the three, but I mean, Bogdanovich played 30 minutes and Marcus played like 15. I mean, I like that lineup maybe more, even if Markieff wasn't injured.
Can I guess? And you tell me if I'm right. If Bogdan's hitting shots, he's going to play. If Bogdan's not hitting shots, he's not going to play. That's pretty much what it boils down to, right? If Bogdan's
well,
not
I don't know. He's
I'm, oh, Scott I'm asking CT, Chris. Hey, Chris. I'm
Brandon Jennings.
Chris, I'm asking CT.
Hey.
It kind of depends on how the game is shaking out, because in game two, they just didn't really play him at all. They only played him like 8 minutes. In the first game, I can't remember. I only watched some of it. I was traveling at the time. But, I mean, he wasn't like super impressive, so I don't know. It just kind of, I think it's more about like what the Celtics throw out at them.
Well, I mean, like, he came out tonight and he just started hitting shots. And
so I mean, then they're obviously
on the
not
floor.
Sure.
Well, but right? I think he also defended better than I think the Celtics go small, and it makes more sense for Gortat to swallow up all the rebounds. I mean, Gortat got like 16 rebounds. He's got it down. He's Robin Lopez in this series. Like, just put wing players around it. And if Markieff is limited athletically because he's injured, then you just want another wing player, and it's fine.
And don't sleep on Bogo's ability to rebound. He had 10 tonight. He doesn't normally rack up double-digit rebounds, but he's very good at finding the right spots to grab rebounds. They lost the last two games, but he did grab some timely ones in game two, at least down the stretch, to give him an extra chance on offense and that sort of thing. So I think that his ability to do that as well, it has been, it was big for him tonight.
I think if they both play small ball, right? Like, they're both playing a center and then a bunch of wing players basically, right? Then you're really, I think there's a reason why the Wizards won tonight really well. I think there's a lot of reasons, but it sort of comes back to that thing where it's like, well, if you have Porter, Beal, Wall, and then I think Bogdanovich is really good, and then Gortat, you have a more talented squad on the court than the Celtics do, right? And Markieff Morris, if he wasn't injured and could defend wings, it would still be more talented, but you're giving the Celtics the edge on execution because Markieff can't move as well. He can't, you're not playing with the same deft hand as you can when you've got Bogdanovich out there. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, and I think last game two was, kind of the perfect example of that.
Right.
We've talked about this over and over again, but, seven Wizards starters were in double digits, and, they scored, what, like 111 points? I don't remember what it was. But, you know, that is normally enough to win on most nights. 119 even. So I think, you know, that is like the encapsulation of your argument right there. So
yeah, I hope they go small, honestly. I hope that, like,
yeah, they looked better doing that.
Yeah. And how do you think that Brandon Jennings is going to start next game and that John Wall will come off the bench?
God, Brandon Jennings, he sucks so bad, dude. God, I saw Wizards fans cheering when they signed him, and I said, "You idiots, what are you cheering for? He's so bad."
I mean, yeah, I think the consensus now is that he has been no better than Trey Burke was, but I think just his, like, edge and his willingness to fight anyone or incite a fight or, you know, just get under, you know, the opposing team's skin is like enough for him to occupy that backup point guard role. While I did not like him before he came to the Wizards, I'm enjoying his stay with the team. And I honestly, it was hysterical to watch him go at it with Rozier because I didn't really know what was going on. I could just see his mouth moving a mile a minute, and I knew that he was getting himself into trouble.
Win in six.
Win in six. Yeah. Oh my God, wouldn't that be something?
All right, well, guys, I got to let CT go because he's got to go sleep, get his beauty rest so that he can go out and watch the Wizards beat the Celtics in game four, but then ultimately be disappointed when the Celtics win in seven. Thanks for coming on, CT. Where can the listeners find you on social media, in the podcast, in radio worlds? And, you know, is there anything you want to say in parting?
Yeah, at CT Schwenk for me, at Zardcast for the pod, obviously almightyballer.com/Zardcast. We did a big episode. Obviously it's outdated a little bit at this point on Wednesday for Dash, which I've listened to on the Dash app, and that's really fun and exciting. But we talked about how much it would take for us to eat poop. And, it turned out that one of our co-hosts, was a little bit closer to that subject than we realized. So,
wow. Oh yeah.
Listen. Yeah.
Yeah. I listened to that. All right. Okay. And then CT, if you need to go to bed right now, then you can do that. But James,
what?
Where can the people find you?
Oh, at Snotty Drippin, which is an homage to my boy Scottie Pippen.
Don't like breaking down basketball, but you write for B-Ball Breakdown. So.
Oh, I just like talking basketball, and I love the story of basketball, and I hate the fact that we get so granular with it that it becomes annoying. That's what
the site is. B-Ball Breakdown, like breaking it down.
Again, you're not listening. You have comprehension problems. It's when they get so granular, like my man Matt Moore, HG Basketball, was saying how, sure, clutch time is the last 5 minutes of the game within, you know, five, but it's the game within three. This guy's shooting this. I'm like, what are you doing, dude? What are you doing? And Jeff Van Gundy said it best. Our fascination with the signing is sucking some of the joy out of the game. So I can get it to a point, but sometimes you guys get on my nerves because you guys are with your abacus and your pencil and paper and your calculator.
Dude,
I
do X's and O's.
You're with verbal analytics, and you're just as bad.
I'm with you, James. I'm a simple man, and I enjoy good narrative. So
there you go, man. I enjoy good narrative. Sometimes I like to see a guy go 10 for 30 because it's the story of it. What do you want?
Farewell, gentlemen. I'll take my leave from here. Good night.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone out there. Whether this is on Dash Radio, which you should download, or if it is on Almighty.
I hope CT sees you in real life and slaps you in the mouth and keep him awake so late.
I got a job interview tomorrow, boys.
You have a job interview?
Yeah, that's later. Really.
Yeah, me and him are going to talk for a minute. That's just on, buddy.
All right.
Oh, wait.
Catch you guys later.
CCG.